Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. It is September 7th, 2017, and this is episode 538. Blech. I am your host, James Jones, and with me today is Guillaume Vaillant.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going, Guillaume. John Lindemann.
They call me Moneyball.
No, they don't. Greg Leahy.
Oi, oi, everyone.
Hello, Greg.
I bought a zoo.
Oh no!
I don't know.
That was more last week, wasn't it?
That was a. I appreciate that Guillaume threw another movie reference at us. I just wish it hadn't been that fucking movie. I'll file it under movies designed to be viewed on international flights. All right, so it is Well, it's the podcast, people, and we're going to go ahead and get right into new business because I don't have a transition out of that start. So, John Lindemann, you received a gift.
Yes, I did. I received a gift from one of our listeners, Sergeant Flowers, correct?
Correct.
Correct, yes. He gifted me Sonic Mania for Switch. Thank you very much, Sergeant Flowers. It is much appreciated. And interestingly enough, he actually got two codes in his collector's edition, right?
Yeah, he bought the collector's edition, and there were two code cards in it.
Sega, solid as always, right on top of
stuff. We were the beneficiaries of Sega's mistakes.
Yes. Yeah, that's typically not the case.
No, usually we're the victims of Sega's mistakes.
Yeah. So, but then in this case, this was actually a great mistake, because Sonic Mania is a really, really, really good game. I was thinking of the best way to describe it, and the best way to describe it would be if somebody took me back to 1991 and said, hey, here is a game, or maybe 92, 93, I don't know, it depends, I'm kind of fuzzy.
I would say it's like Sonic and Knuckles-esque more.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Like 94, 95?
Yeah, I'm a little bit fuzzy on when the Sega CD came out in the 32X and Sega did their whole...
So Sega CD, I want to say, is 95.
Yeah, so it would have been around that time if someone would have said, hey, here's a game that we never released, done. And
Sega CD's before Knuckles, so whatever. Whatever. 94,
yeah.
95. We'll go with that.
But you get what I'm saying. Like, it feels like a game right from that era, like ripped right out of that era, out of a time machine. It's that good. I mean, the look of the game is dead on. And this was actually the story behind this game is that it was done mainly by people that were just fans of the series. I mean, it's not done by Sonic Team or anything like that.
One of the developers on it, Christian Whitehead, had worked on other ports of Sonic games in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I think he worked on the Sega, the iOS port of Sonic CD, which is apparently like really good for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
So he had experience making ports of early Sonic games.
Yep.
But this is a bit different.
Yep, and it's great. I mean, it's the best Sonic game I've played. Not that this is saying much. It's always Sonic, so I feel like there's a lot of asterisks you have to throw around. I was going to say, it's the best...
the Sonic scale.
It's the best Sonic game that I've played in a long time. And that's really including, I mean, really, I would say the last Sonic game that I actually got is, I think I downloaded the original Sonic the Hedgehog on Xbox Live Arcade for Xbox One, but you know, that's my most recent Sonic experience, and it holds up. I like Sonic the Hedgehog games. I'm not a huge fan of the later ones. I really didn't like how they moved it to 3D. Mm. But the 2D games I really like, and this one fits right in there really nicely. I mean, it starts off in Green Hill Zone, and the music is dead on. The music is fantastic. I would say probably the only thing that I would criticize really is... And this has been, I read some reviews, and this is kind of a common thing, is that people think that the bosses are pretty easy. And I would say they are easy. They're easy to figure out. They're not that easy. They're easy to take down. But I don't have a problem with that, because I don't want this game to be extremely difficult. I just want to kind of play through and enjoy it.
That's not an unusual statement about the Sonic bosses in general, though. Mm-hmm. Like, I never looked at a Sonic boss and thought, well, this is a complicated puzzle boss. You know, there are some, like, I think it's in 3 where there's a robot where it's just two giant metal hands that come out on the stage. Eventually the head comes up. It's Robotnik's big dumb robot of the day. Mm-hmm. That involve like you have to hit the fingers or something like that. But that's really as complicated as they get. Like they're not overly convoluted things to deal with.
Yeah, that was actually one of the things I liked about Freedom Planet when I spoke about that, which is obviously very Sonic inspired, is that, you know, the bosses were way more complex.
Yeah, they're a little bit more like Gunstar Heroes bosses.
Yeah, more on the sort of treasure star, you know, big spectacle and relatively complex kind of in terms of patterns and stuff, way different from what you saw in the classic Sonic game. So yeah, I guess it makes sense it would be more like that than like Freedom Planet.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you're playing, I played with Miles Tails Prower, and he trails behind you and hits, and you can kind of use him to, you can kind of jump past an enemy and use him to trail behind you and hit the enemy as you go past it. And you could do stuff like that. I don't really know if there's any more. I mean, I just jumped right into this game. I didn't bother, you know.
So, I mean, I would assume there's a two-player mode that
yeah.
Because, I mean, Tails was always kind of the little brother mode, because he doesn't really do anything. He can't control the camera. He can easily wind up off-screen. Mm-hmm. And he oftentimes, and Sonic 06 caught shit because you just hear Tails die in the background when he was running behind you because he couldn't handle it. But in fact, that's a legacy of like Sonic 2, where you could just hear Tails die in the background because he got caught on something because the second player couldn't see what they were doing.
Yeah. In this one, he helicopters back in once he gets off screen. And you don't really have to worry about him.
That's something that they introduced in Sonic 3. They introduced the fact that the second player, when controlling Tails, can activate the helicopter thing and give Sonic lifts. So there is an advantage there when you're playing co-op. Like, you're kind of underpowered, or, you know, like, it's hard to just stay on the freaking screen, but you can give access to Sonic to other places that he usually couldn't access.
He's almost the Tingle Tuner.
Right. Like, and from what I've heard, in this game, in Sonic Mania, you do get the ability as well, but also you're supposed to be able in single player to activate that by yourself. Mm-hmm. So it's maybe you should look at the manual.
yeah, I should read the friggin' manual. But yeah, I mean, it's really enjoyable. I feel like it has the real feel of a Sonic game. You do a lot of inventive stuff in a lot of the worlds. Just they play a lot with, you know, Sonic being sort of like that kind of that pinball sort of thing where you'll hop into a tube and, you know, you'll go all over the place and then you'll wind up in some completely different area of the level. And, you know, on that note, there's a lot of stuff to find, a lot of stuff to figure out. It's really, really good. I'm really surprised at how good it is. I'd heard good things, but I was like, wow, it's really impressive. So, I mean, if you're in the mood, if you've ever liked a Sonic game, I think Sonic Mania will be right up your alley, and it plays great on Switch. I've played it both on television, on the TV, and I've played it in portable mode, and it plays great both ways. I highly recommend it.
I know there was an issue at launch about like the home button didn't work right or something. Has that been resolved?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't get issued a patch for it. I haven't had any problems with it.
Okay, so maybe it did. I know that was the only issue with the Switch version, was like there was some weird stuff that normally probably shouldn't have passed lot check, but, you know, they're probably like, well, you know, we'll let it slide. They're good to fixing it. It's kind of crazy that so this game gets called a fan game a lot, which it's a little bit of a misnomer, because obviously, like I said, the person who led this had previously ported a bunch of games for Sega in the franchise. Additional staff that was brought into this game were people who had made fan games. I'm trying to remember what the name of the company was that was involved in producing it. But like they were people who had come in and actually made some fan games, and they were people out of the fan game community. But like, I mean, it has a Sega producer, but still at the same time, it's kind of crazy that Sega said, okay, well, fine. Well, you guys know our series well enough that you can make this game for us.
Yep.
And they did, and it's good. And then next month, Sega has its own game coming out in the franchise that doesn't look good.
Yeah. And yeah, so it just makes me really wonder. That had occurred to me, and it really just makes me wonder kind of like what happened to Sega. Like, they just, you know, because they always say, right, and it got me thinking on a larger note, how you always hear, and I mean, you've heard this with stuff like Metroid and stuff like that, where,
sure,
oh, well, such and such left the company, so therefore there's no way they could make that game feel like that again, right? Oh, that team is no longer with company X, so therefore, if they made another game in that series, there's no way they could recreate that feeling. And this game just goes to show that that's a load of crap.
No, you have to have people. No, people have to know the game and be intimate with what they're making. You can't just put any old team on there and say, okay, go make a Sonic game. I mean, these are people who had, like I said, one have been involved in porting games for Sonic franchise. A bunch of them have been involved in making fan games. They're obviously passionate about the series, and experienced in, like, this wasn't their first rodeo. Like, they knew what they were doing.
Yep.
And it shows. And you can do that. Like, you can actually put together a team to make it. You don't need the original Mega Man team to make a good Mega Man game.
Yeah.
I mean, Inti Creates made a bunch of Mega Man games that are really good. They didn't make the original Mega Man. But it's, you know, you don't need Inti Creates to make a Mega Man Zero game. Like, even though they made those, like, you just have to have people who are passionate about it, and you have to have, for, I don't know if corporate governance is the word I want to use, but you have to have, like, oversight to make sure that what they're producing is quality, and to provide them with the resources they need if they need stuff. You know, Sega didn't just, like, this wasn't just delivered to their door done. I mean, they were obviously involved. But yeah, like, they made sure the people they had on hand to make the game knew what they were doing and were, you know, the right way, and were doing the right stuff. And it, you know, it gave fans of the series from that era. And we have to use that, because there are, as John alluded to earlier, there are two Sonic eras, and both of them have fans. That, like, it serves that community in a way that they haven't been served since, I don't know, Sonic and Knuckles? Maybe the GBA games? I guess probably the GBA games.
Yeah.
But that's, what, 12 years ago?
Yeah. I mean, do you think that there are people out there that would prefer Sonic Forces to this?
Yeah. I'll say
that I played Sonic Forces at E3, and I didn't think it was that bad, but then again, I played it for about 10 minutes.
Sure. There are people who that is... So, I'm going to use the Mega Man example here, because it's the one I'm most familiar with. Everybody who grew up with a Mega Man series has their Mega Man series, and it's totally based on when you grew up. So, you know, my age demographic, it's Mega Man X or Mega Man Zero.
Are you saying it's your Mario? That's what you're saying?
Well, Mario's a little bit different, because Mario's evolution is...
To quote Dr. Metz.
Mario's evolution has been kind of not quite so dramatic. Like, the 3D and the 2D have happened, but it's, you know, they've kind of continued to let both happen.
Yep.
But, like, you know, Sonic had a very discreet break where it's like, these are the games of this style. Now let's make the games of this style. And if you grew up with the second style, and, you know, you liked the characters and the sort of tone the series took on at that point, and maybe the gameplay wasn't perfect, but you just kind of liked the world they were making, like, you were super into Sonic skating around on soap shoes or, you know, whatever, you know, you thought Crash 40's music's awesome. Like, if you grew up with that Sonic, you might look at the old Sonic and just think, like, this is cartoony and weird.
Yeah. Now, there are nods to the 3D games in Sonic Mania through their mini games, which they place you into a 3D arena and have you, you know, one of the mini games is to, you have to collect, like, blue and yellow pellets that give you more speed, so you go after a UFO at the end of the level, and it's all 3D, and you're running
forward. Those showed up kind of, those showed up in like the gem missions in the old Sonic games. That was like the secret rings.
Yep, and you're collecting Chaos Emeralds and stuff like that.
Yeah. But what amuses me more about this is, just from a little bit I've seen, some of the weird, like, cameo-ish things that show up. I saw, like, there's a Mean Bean illusion at one point, or it's just like, this is some weird shit that you guys have made.
Yes, very strange. At the end of I think the third level, or somewhere near the end of it, you get dropped into, like, this game of Puyo Puyo. Again, I think that's the boss. So you have to beat Eggman at a game of Puyo Puyo, and of course he's pretty terrible. So
right.
you you spank him and then move on. But I was just like, wait a minute, what the hell's going on? And it's all of a sudden I'm like, oh, okay, it's Puyo Puyo. And you just like sit there and do your thing and move on. But it's just a lot of creative stuff like that and a lot of nods to other games.
So. Yeah, it's cool. And like, I really, like, I'm more than anything, I'm happy for the people who this was their Sonic. And that they haven't had something since, I don't know, Advance 3, maybe Rush, depending on how you want to look at it.
Yeah, Sonic Rush was really the last. Yeah, because I got that. I got that, and that was probably the last really, really good Sonic game I played.
Yeah, because I think there was a sequel to Rush, like Rush Adventure or something like that.
Right.
And I think that was the last like purely 2D style Sonic game. Although even then,
the Sonic Colors for DS was another with Dimps that was developed one that was pretty similar to Rush, I believe. I didn't play it. I played the Wii version.
Gotcha.
And then the Sonic Generations had a 3DS version that was kind of separate from the HD console game. There's been ones over time. And I think, you know, those are kind of generally sort of been regarded more favorably than their sort of cousins a lot of the time. Although people like Colors. I like Colors to some extent.
Yeah, and it... They're also, and I talked about earlier about how there's distinct parts of the Sonic that people like. They're still sort of like putting the modern Sonic into Generations to a lesser extent. Generations actually plays with this, but Colors especially is putting the modern Sonic into the 2D format versus like here's the characterization of Sonic from 1995. Like this game is you know, early 90s Sonic with your weird Michael Jackson music and everything just here for you now to consume. Like this game could have come out in 96 and been destroyed because it would have been out in 96, but still it could have been there. Mm-hmm. Although there's probably some technical stuff that it couldn't, that it's doing under the hood. But
yeah, Whitehead said that what they were aiming at was if a Sonic 2D Sonic game came out on the Saturn. So they're definitely not they weren't keeping to what the Genesis could do.
Right. And the Saturn could do some pretty amazing 2D stuff.
Yeah, it was built for that, for 2D.
Yeah. Yes, it's just the Neo Geo strategy. We'll build for our strengths. I'm sure the market's not changing on us.
Yeah, it was like making the best VHS player ever.
It was like making the best Betamax player ever.
In 1995, making the best VHS ever. Yeah, but Sonic Mania, it's great. I'm going to keep rolling through it. I'm definitely gonna finish it off. If you would have told me that in 2017 I would have been playing a 2D Sonic game all the way to completion, I would have said you're crazy, but here we are.
There we go.
So
that's high praise.
Yeah, and I would add that even though I did get this game for free, I was planning on buying it, and I would actually stick to that. I would pay $20 for this game. It's definitely worth it.
Yeah. We had the opportunity, and I reached out to these guys and said, hey, who wants it? I was actually a little surprised that John raised his hand, but I was eager to get his impressions. So
now, Guillaume, what did you say? I remember you had a particularly interesting comment.
You answered first, and I was trying to... You know, these grapes were probably sour anyway.
But, oh, okay.
Yeah. I was like, your dumb Sonic game. No, yeah. It's fine. Hopefully more people get double codes and decide that we're worthy of them.
Or single codes and just decide they don't want their game. Like, yeah. We'll take your hard-earned money off your hands.
Absolutely.
Speaking of which, John...
Speaking of taking hard-earned money off my hands, Destiny 2, aka Destiny the Do-Over.
Destiny 1 Part 5.
Yeah. Yeah, Destiny. Okay, so the deal is with this, obviously Destiny is an interesting game for me, the original one, because I talk a lot of trash about that game. I kind of openly trash
Everyone
it.
Everyone did.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I don't know anyone who didn't seem to be hate playing that game.
You know, but that's the thing though. I talk a lot of trash about it, but I was looking a while back at how many trophies I got, because I played it on PS4, and I got the sequel on PS4. I got 75% of the trophies in that game.
It's weird. Like, it plays well, but it does so much shit wrong.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was an extremely solid first-person shooter, and that's what, as a first-person shooter fan, that's what kept bringing me back to it. The story was terrible, just horribly written.
Also available only online.
Yeah, I mean, cardboard characters, all the lore, there's very little lore in the game. You had to find it in your iOS app. It was just so silly. There's so many silly things about that game. The way that they, a lot of the ways that they handled gear was just completely counterintuitive and idiotic.
Well, and their monetization strategy caught a lot of ire because it was a lot of expensive add-on packs.
Mm-hmm.
Was it three or four?
I think there were for me, I got the deluxe edition, so the season pass. But there was at least two of them, I think, in the normal thing. But then there was like a, I don't know, there was three overall, three major expansions, and I think one of them was part of the season pass, and I think two of them were pay. I don't know, but anyways, yeah. So they did kind of. I wouldn't say they lied to their player base, but certainly they took the expansion of that game in places that people didn't expect. Let's just say. And at the same time, they did make the game a lot better in those expansions, but by that time a lot of people had soured on it anyways. So they did what they did. And it is what it is. So Destiny 2 comes along, and suffice it to say they've solved a lot of those problems. The fact one of the things that the original game was criticized for was the fact that it really didn't have much content at all in the original release.
That's a great complaint to your launch. There's nothing here.
Yeah, like really. I mean, you would get through the story, and then there really wasn't a whole lot to do.
Because it is the ultimate games as a service game. Like there's a constant schedule of weeklies, and I guess there's dailies too, aren't there?
Yeah, there's dailies. I mean, it's your typical MMO formula where you have stuff that you can do every day for currency and whatnot, and then you have stuff that you can only do once a week. Like, basically stuff that gives you better loot, like raids and stuff like that. So this does not stray from the formula of the original whatsoever. It's the same type of game to the point where what it does is it looks for your characters if you have your characters. I'm assuming it's probably on PS4 at least. It's probably checks either your local disk or the cloud or both. It finds one of your save files and sees if you have characters on there, and then it imports them. That really doesn't do much for you aside from just bringing in the character models. You don't get any gear or nothing like that. Your character is reset to nothing, and part of the story, of course, is kind of like a reboot sort of thing, you know. Bad guy comes, destroys everything. Everything is terrible. You have to save the world again because you have no power. You have to get your power back. There's that kind of thing. So, but that's fine. But what the main thing is, they've improved a lot of the stuff around, specifically in the one player game. First off, you don't have to go out to orbit to do everything, which was so dumb in the first game. Everything, anytime you want to go anywhere, go ahead.
Go out to orbit? You mean literally?
Yes. Well, yes, actually go literally out to orbit. But in this case, yeah, it was kind of like almost like it was a hub world where, so let's say you were at your home base. If you wanted to go to another planet, you'd be given a quest to go to a certain planet. You had to go out to orbit and then go to that planet.
So now it was two stops.
Yeah, it was two stops. And it just wastes the player's time. They don't have that anymore. Now you can just bring up a map anywhere and you can warp directly to a place. Even if you're on a map already, you can warp to a different spot if it's been unlocked. So it's a lot better. There's a lot more to do in the one player areas. You have these kind of like little guided adventure. You have like your main quest stuff that you can do, and then you also have like sub quests scattered around. A lot of the characters are better. They're more fleshed out. A lot of the lore is in the game this time. When you meet a character, yeah, it's amazing. When you meet a character, they kind of give you their little story, and their story kind of unfolds, and you know, you can they describe like your character class and other characters and stuff actually in the game, as opposed to you having to go out to the companion app and search for something. So a lot of that is a lot better. The way that they handle gear actually makes sense. Your gear power is just an average of everything that you have. There's no more bullshit like getting the loot tokens, which are called engrams. You used to have stuff happen like you would... actually, I rage quit the original game for a while because it was impossible to get a purple, which is like a rare. And once you got it, it would give you, at least this happened to me several times, is I was playing as like a warlock or something. There's warlock, titan, and hunter. I was playing as a warlock, so I had to grind and grind and grind to even get a rare loot token. And then when I went and cashed it in, it gave me gear for a hunter, and I didn't even have a hunter character. Yes, and it was stuff like that. I eventually, there's actually a really angry tweet out there that I send at them, and it was just so maddening. And there was other stuff too, just stupid stuff where you just wonder what they were thinking.
Was there at least an economy, like you could sell stuff and trade for stuff? Fuck's sake.
Nope.
It's a loot game with no trading?
Yeah, you literally had to sit there and just, you would work so hard for this loot that you got, and your only choice was to throw it in a vault and maybe use it if you happen to create a character of that class.
Yuck.
It was completely idiotic. And then there was other stuff too, like you would with the loot tokens where you would hand them in, and what it would do is it would give you loot back based on the light level of the armor that you had on at that moment, even if it wasn't the highest light level that you could achieve. So you would typically have two sets of armor, the armor that you use to actually play the game, and then the armor that got you to the highest item level. And if you fucked it up, then you were just stuck with like lower level armor than you should have had. It was totally stupid.
That was the dumbest shit ever, John.
It is the dumbest shit. Yes, it is the dumbest shit ever. And there was a whole bunch of stuff like that that you had to tolerate when playing that game. But all that said, I still put a heck of a lot of time into it. So I'm enjoying my time with Destiny 2 for sure, because it does away with all that stuff. You'll find yourself repeatedly saying, wow, okay, that actually makes sense compared to the first game.
You're big on the loot games, though, aren't you? Like, this isn't your... Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. I like kind of like min-maxing gear and you know, kind of that stuff. And the thing is with this, though, they give you gear. You're always getting gear that's better than what you have. That's the big difference.
Oh, thank God.
Like, every single piece of gear you get, it seems like they run a scan on what you have, and they say, okay, well, you'll get gear that's 10 points better than what you have. So you never feel like you're always getting gear drops. Like, sometimes maybe if your gear is like a level 93, you might get a 91. But most of the time, you'll get like a 98 or a 101. So it always feels like you're progressing. Now, how long that lasts, I don't know. I'm sure eventually you hit a wall.
Right. Eventually you plateau.
Yeah. You would plateau eventually, and then you'd probably have to like start going into – you won't really move the meter very much unless you go into a raid or something like that. Like raid farming and stuff like that. But that's typical MMO stuff, so that's kind of expected.
That's end game stuff.
Exactly. And they still have the Crucible is still in there for PvP, and you can get, you know, you can grind rep for that. They've switched that up a little bit where the teams are smaller, where they used to be six players, now they're four versus four. And that kind of speeds things up a little bit. So they've done a lot to make the game kind of give you gear, like trickle you out gear in a way that makes the game more rewarding, and also just speed a lot of things up and kind of give time back to the player. So
nice.
Yeah. So I think I'm really going to enjoy it. I mean, I've already been playing it. There's a lot of friends of mine that have it for PS4. So it's cool. So I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to seeing you in October.
Likely going to happen.
Guillaume.
Yeah. So, you know, we make jokes about my Nintendo and their worthless rewards.
They're not jokes. They're just statements of fact.
Well, yeah. But, you know, sometimes it's for effect. We're, you know, an entertainment show. We're not, you know, information.
I disagree. I think everything I say is the most sterling information.
All this to say that I have benefited from my Nintendo rebate. A while ago, I exchanged some points for a 40% rebate on Picross 3D Round 2, a game. And like, this is one of the one situation where you would actually find my Nintendo useful, is if you actually really, really, really wanted a title, but for whatever reason held off on it. My reason was that, you know, like, they were charging $40 Canadian. But still, you know, you held out long enough for my Nintendo to actually pay off at some point. So,
and to be fair, it did. Which
it did.
But, it doesn't but, always.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there are other games out there in the other, either, I don't know how to say that word, that that I'm waiting for, and that will only, you know, coalesce in my library once, you know, my Nintendo offers something for them. But and I might be waiting forever. I don't know what I'm saying.
There's something very poignant
the game,
about
Guillaume.
What you've said.
Talk about
I
the
just,
game.
I just picture you on a cliff with the wind blowing, looking out over the horizon, waiting for
Picross. He doesn't have long flowing hair, John. Doesn't work.
Waiting for Picross 3D to come floating in across the ocean.
Wait, so you were
James, floating across the ocean, James. It did. I'm on the East Coast.
Getting the Guillaume is Magus, Picross 3D is Charlotte, and you've found it wandering around in modern-day Japan or whatever.
Yeah.
Picross 3D Round 2, a love story, is what we're hearing right now.
I mean, I know Guillaume has a cloak in his closet. That's just a given, but I'm just
saying. Well, yeah.
It's called a cloakroom, John Lindemann.
He edits with his magical scythe. That's what he does.
Yeah.
There will be cuts.
Cut and splice together. Anyway, so Picross 3D Realm 2, it's a really good game, and immediately, like, it was clear to me that this game has lost none of its addictiveness when I ended up playing until past midnight on a weekday, and I was like, oh no, what have I done? It's a really good Picross game. The kind of the new mechanic of having two colors to fill in is welcome. Like, it gives this game something that the original did not have on the DS. And it allows for some different strategies. What I especially like is that they just do a better job now. Like, they actually give you an honest-to-goodness tutorial. Not that I need it. Like, there are tutorials for things that you used to have to intuit or kind of, you know, figure out on your own. And I think maybe, like, it might have been difficult for some people. Like, they might, I see a lot of comments sometimes about Picross. Like, well, I don't see how I could have solved that without guessing. But I guessed right and I solved this Picross puzzle. And, like, usually, no. Like, they're not... They're designed to be able to be figured out without any guesswork. But you have to know certain tricks. And so in Picross Round 2, 3D Round 2, they made these tricks explicit. And they don't dump them on you all at once. They kind of dole them out, like, after a certain amount of progress. And so, unfortunately... There's no physical copy of this game that came out in North America, so I couldn't just lend my copy to Karen. But I had her try the DS game, and she hadn't liked it. She didn't stick to it. But with this one, with the tutorial, it really eased her in better. And we'll see if she sticks with it or not. I don't know yet. The game's addictive. I've been playing it just about, like, all the time, everywhere. I took the public transportation today, and just like I said about Etrian Odyssey and mapping maps on the subway, I look like a huge dork holding my 3DS, like, in a way that I can hold the bottom of the 3DS and a stylus and just, you know, like, kind of... pick away at the Picross puzzle, but I don't know. Picross 3D is worth people not looking at you in the eye in public. So
it's worth making the entire subway car uncomfortable.
Yeah, well,
you say that like it's a bad thing.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes it feels weird. Yeah. So Picross 3D, it's really good. Another game that I've been playing. There's kind of a longer story to it. So I've played Double Dragon Neon, but I've talked about this game before on this podcast.
You have?
Yeah, I have. On episode 306. So before telling you how it plays, my opinion hasn't really changed on it. Like, the Karen and I have been playing more beat-em-ups. It's just very cathartic these days to just punch people in the mouth, but it's safer to do in a video game. And it kind of started out with me being like, oh, Karen Knight are kind of going through all of the early Simpsons again. We've been you know, taking the DVDs from the library, watching them, and I was like, well, I don't think Karen has seen the arcade game, which I own, and I went on my PS3, on PSN, and I go through my library, can't find it. I go through my PSN downloads, which is the stupidest system that ever existed, because
horrible,
it keeps track.
Horrible UI.
It's absolutely impossible to sort. It's just, you know, what you get is reverse chronological order, and that's it. Yep. And it keeps all your the demos that you downloaded, the unlocked keys for some reason, the TV shows that I rented or bought, or, you know, movies that I rented. So I had like 20 pages, like, I don't know, over 400 items to go through. It felt like going through the Wii Shop. So it was that bad. And I went through the whole thing, and I never found the Simpsons game. And of course, you can't just look for it anymore because it's been delisted. You know, the license expired, and Konami is not offering it anymore. So my guess is that when I had PS Plus, I must have gotten the game for free and never really got a chance to actually purchase it. And so once my PS Plus subscription
expired,
I just lost the game forever with no opportunity to actually purchase them things. So,
well, if you get that PS really Plus subscription sucks. Again, Guillaume. That's how they get you.
I'm not sure if it will give me back my games.
I think you
games.
Lose them. I think you have to keep it up to date.
Yeah, really? I think, yeah, if you let it lapse, I've seen some stories on the internet. I don't know.
I would think that it would just have that untied forever to your account.
Anyway, for sure, John, it would be the right thing to do. But
what about this, the quick
as we've
thing
heard,
to do?
Yeah, as we've heard in the Sunshine Retroactive, I've tasted the forbidden fruit. I went and downloaded Guillaume's emulators. I kind of like it.
You've changed, so, man.
Yeah, so I downloaded MAME, which is an arcade emulator, and
which
went
awesome.
And found the ROM for... Yeah, it's pretty awesome, except that yep. I'd rather have the PSN game, to be honest, because with MAME, I downloaded the ROM for the Simpsons arcade game, and it's one of those arcade cabinets where the character is tied to a specific position on
yes.
the arcade cabinet, so, you know, like on the far
yeah, player
left,
two is always Lisa, I think. Something like that.
It's always Marge. Okay. Homer's player one and Lisa and Bart are three and four. And so maybe there's an easy way to do it, but I haven't found it. My controllers that I had plugged in my computer defaulted to players one and two. And so we were stuck playing Marge and Homer, and we couldn't really check out the other characters without, I don't know, like remapping completely the buttons for the two controllers for just that one game, just to switch characters. So it didn't really make any sense, but it was fun. And so, yeah, so we just fell into this groove of playing beat 'em ups, and I went through, Streets of Rage 2 again, and... played X-Men, which I must have purchased at some point, even though it was a PSN Plus freebie, because I still have it on PSN. And eventually I went and re-downloaded Double Dragon Neon and played that with Karen, and she really enjoyed it. Like, it's a dumb but funny game. And we made it to the end of the first level, and then demo over. Turns out it's another game that I never... owned
nice
for real, and it was a PSN Plus freebie. So, oh my god, I hate that system, and I hope that whatever Nintendo is doing, I hope it's better than that. I hope you don't lose forever whatever you've accumulated. I think they've kind of waffled back and forth on that. We still don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, I would
right?
say
Correct.
No matter what you've heard from them, don't put any credence in it whatsoever until we actually have it in front of us.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a good policy to have with Nintendo, because as you commented in the comments to our last episode, James,
yes.
Nintendo is the type of company that will release a modem for the GameCube and never put out anything for it.
Literally release no games for it.
Yeah. Well, it did allow for LAN, Mario Kart.
No. The the LAN adapter allowed for it. The modem adapter, which is a different device, did not.
Right. I you know, I didn't own either of those things.
So. No, because you have good sense. PlayStation, Phantasy Star Online 1, 2, and 3 use that device. But I'm not sure anything else did. But you're right. The LAN adapter could be used for LAN play in F-Zero, I think. I don't know about anything else.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, like it's crazy. It's a crazy piece of hardware.
Yeah. So anyway, with all of that said, Double Dragon Neon, it's still really, really good. It's still very satisfying. It's so dumb, you know. Like you'll pick up baseball bats and swing them at the enemies, and your two bros that you play as, and they're very bro-y. They really played up the broness with, like, you can, you know, high five your buddy and all that stuff. so you swing the bat and, like, he'll say touchdown or grand slam. So and it's, I don't know, it's pretty funny for you know, the first few times. So we played through that and it was great. And now, today, Double Dragon 4 came out on the Wii, on the Switch. Sorry, nothing came out on the Wii. Are you nuts? I'm kind of eyeing it, but everything that I've read about it tells me that it's kind of a miserable experience.
Yeah, Double Dragon 4 is
apparently
what
went
you've
a
read
little,
is accurate.
Right. Okay. So you have played it.
I have played it.
Okay. Well, so what? Like, do you have to press two buttons at the same time to jump, and are there like exacting platforming segments where you lose a life?
Here's what I would say. Double Dragon 4, everything about Double Dragon that you've come to know, and I don't know what the best word is, expect, you would expect them to have made progress on it.
Right.
But
it seems
like they did.
Yeah, it seems like they deliberately kept all the bullshit in, which is not the choice I would have made.
Double Dragon 4 came out in like, it was about like it was
it came out it
earlier
early
this
year.
Year I'm trying to,
yeah,
trying to
in
remember.
January
yeah because it was is Arxis made this thing
yeah
and like they decided they want like it's not let me take a step back it's not terrible like I've only played it for a little bit but like it sure is a Double Dragon game.
I don't know, we played Double Dragon 2 and it was fun until the you know until the bullshit started. So I kind of wonder if I could get some enjoyment out of it anyway. But the thing is, Switch is getting so many co-op games, so many beat-em-ups. Yeah. Like, a bunch of them was announced just last week. So I can probably hold off.
I would rather play a Bobo's Big Adventure again, let's put it that way.
Right.
Which is... This ridiculous Flash game starring a Bobo.
Yeah, well, it was deliberately crazy and funny and stupid. And it's also, there's no way in hell that it comes out on any console ever.
It's an unlicensed Flash game. You have to make your browser do Flash and then go play it.
Yeah, and using, like, you know, all sorts of sprites from other franchises that they have no rights to, so... Yeah.
It's super not okay. But speaking of fan games, it's kind of stupid in a beautiful way.
Yeah. So, that's what I've been up to.
Cool. All right. So, I guess I'll go next. And I guess it's on the notes. I go next. I've been playing a lot of Yakuza Kiwami, which is the remake of the original Yakuza game that came out in, I want to say 2005? Maybe a little bit after that. So you know, this PS2 game, it received like actual full like Western dub and localization and all kinds of stuff like that. Totally, utterly missing the point of what the series is. Sega didn't know how to promote it, and it performed middlingly. But the series has sort of had this renaissance. I would say you can maybe look at 4, although 4 didn't do super well, as like when the series kind of took some strides that got it attention. Like that was the first one Sega released here, just said, look, it's a Japanese game, it's in Japanese, deal with it. But really it was 0, which came out earlier this year and I talked glowingly about, that the series kind of caught fire in the West. So Yakuza 0 takes place in the 80s. Kiwami takes place in 95 and then 2005. So the very beginning's in 95 and then 10 years of jail for our boy Kiryu, and then he's out in 2005. And essentially it feels like a big add-on to Yakuza 0. Like it feels like a free, I'm stealing this from Seren, it's like a freestanding DLC for Yakuza 0. Because it's so clearly built on the same tech. And of course the Yakuza series reuses art like nobody's business. Like assets in that game get reused in almost kind of wonderful ways where you're like, okay, how are they going to reuse assets today? And you'll be like, I've been in this same room 35 times. Last time I was here, it was a bunch of boxes that said paper on them. Now it's a bunch of tools on that shelf. But that fucking shelf was still there last time I was here 20 years ago in this exact same room. But, you know, it's all about the story and the game world they're trying to make. Immediately right off the bat, Yakuza 0 is more of a game than Kiwami. The first Yakuza game is by far the shortest. They hadn't really found their lane yet. The amount of side content in that game is smaller than its later predecessors.
They only had one hostess club, I suppose.
They had two. Shine, and I can't remember what the other one's called. And then there's a host club, to be fair. And it's the scene of a bunch of crime, because crime happens. Because if you don't know about the Yakuza series, it's about crime. You play the world's worst criminal. Kiryu Kazuma.
Who it was probably Seren that retweeted that one cartoon about it, and it said it had a picture of him, and it said, "I'm gonna go out and do crimes." And then the next frame is like him feeding the dog and like,
yeah,
like doing something silly like knitting or something like that, and then like counseling somebody like, "I believe in you, and I think you could do anything." Like,
oh yeah, so
he's supposed to be a hardcore gangster.
Yakuza 0 is where the series went full fucking lunatic. Like to give you an idea of what happens in
this,
that game.
This is the infamous. Is this the golden shotgun?
Yeah. Oh, the golden shotgun, which is great. Yes. Which just destroys everybody and also makes money spit out of them. But Yakuza 0, your experience was cash because it took place during the Japan economic bubble. And so you could just do these side games to make basically infinite money and max out your stats like at the very beginning of the game. But there was a side quest in Yakuza 0 where you met a woman working at an S&M club who was too timid to do her job, and you had to help her become a dominant, which involved phrases, which at one point involved you hiding behind an armoire while her client was in the room, and then Kiryu being an idiot trying to scratch his face or something and getting discovered. And the grand resolution that you did a good job is she yells at him, "Don't look at him, look at me." And in the interim at one point, you helped her role play, and a bunch of kids were in the park trying to figure out what you were doing and if it was fun. Like that's what Yakuza 0 is. And Kiwami doesn't get there because the source material isn't that lunatic driven. And
right, it was supposed to be like written by this famous like Japanese crime novelist or something.
Yeah, and it's not trying to tell as convoluted a story. Like, but every Yakuza game, they're like, we need to be more complicated now. Like, fuck it, 7 gangs are involved. Why? I don't know. They just are. And our good old boy Kiryu is like, well, we can't hurt anyone. I'm going to go wreck every gangster on the street's face, and I'm going to rescue this little girl, and I'm not going to make all the money that I could get for turning this woman in. I'm going to protect her, even though I don't know what I'm protecting her for or why, and it's probably going to get me killed. Yeah. Like he's it's a very weird situation where they wanted to make him this like moral paragon, but then they made him like a major player in the criminal underworld. Like he idolizes his adoptive father. He grew up in an orphanage. He idolizes him, and that's what made him become a mobster. But his adoptive father rose to power as a mob assassin, something Kiryu knows, but then spends a lot of time talking about, like, he wouldn't do this because that's not how, you know, I got into this because I idolized you, but then he's like, you can't kill people, that's not just. It's like, what the fuck's wrong with you? So our slightly soft in the head Kiryu is this sort of lovable buffoon who just sort of has the world happen to him. And in this game, like I said, there's less stuff than Zero. So Zero is definitely a better game. It's got more stuff in it. It's more wacky. But this game, they've definitely added some wackiness to it. To give you an example, in Zero, one of the side things you can do is Kiryu can race up slot cars. And he can get way into customizing his slot cars. And he meets a guy who runs the slot car arena who's wearing like a full track suit that's got like red, orange, and yellow racing stripes the whole length of it. And you have this weird side quest where he talks about how he has a hard time meeting women wearing this tracksuit in a basement with a bunch of kids doing slot cars. go figure.
That's so great.
Kiri like gives him some advice. It's a weird scene.
That was the other thing that was in that cartoon, by the way.
So
him playing with slot cars and surrounded by a bunch of children.
In Kiwami, one of the kids runs up to you and tells you slot cars are back in style. Kiryu goes, oh, I remember those from the 80s. And then if you go to the arena, it's the same guy wearing the exact same tracksuit, but he's older. And he tells Kiryu that he has a date tonight, and Kiryu's like stunned. Like, what, really? He goes, what, you didn't believe in me? It's like, dude, it's been 20 years. I think his doubt was justified. God. But when I say like they reuse assets, so it's the same room you're in, but the karaoke game in this reuses one of the songs from Yakuza Zero. Or he reuses a few of them. And it reuses the video, like the video that goes with it. And in the video that goes with it, it's always Kiryu and Co. like recast into this dumb music video that goes with the song. And it's this ballad where he's singing about loss. And it's the exact same video as in Zero, where he's sitting at the bar, he's drinking, and he's looking at a picture. And then, like, they show the picture, and in Zero, it's the orphanage he grew up in. It's the people that he lost in the previous, you know, or he's lost going on in time. And it cuts back to him, like, sort of mourning that, and it goes, it's more shots of the past. In this one, it's the exact same scene, and then you get a shot of the picture, and it's the slot car guy from the 80s. Aww. And then it's just, like, weird clips, and then it cuts back to Kiryu still singing mournfully about it. Now, it changes depending on which time you do it. So, like, in Zero one time, I got some real weird bullshit that popped up. I'm sure if I kept doing the song. But, like, they reused the whole thing, except they went and made this fucking weird slot. Oh, God, this game is awesome. Now, in terms of what game I'd recommend playing, definitely play Zero if you haven't played the series. Zero does more than Kiwami because it's not just a remake. It was a brand new game that they poured a lot of efforts into. There's more stuff. It's more expansive. And like I said, Kiwami really feels like they had to retcon a lot of story from Zero because basically like this was his origin story originally, but then they went and made him involved in like the biggest gang blow up in Japanese history 20 years earlier before his character really had any kind of arc. And it's like, oh, well, now we have to account for that, I guess. And so people talk to him different and there's like some weird throwbacks to stuff that happened in Zero, but like, yeah, this definitely builds on the foundations of that game, but it's still really good. And it's cheaper than Zero because of the relative lack of new content. And yeah, I'm burning through it pretty quick. It's goofy. It's ridiculous. Right now, like, I took a judoka, a retired judoka, to an underground fighting arena because he wanted a tour of town. He wanted to go somewhere exciting. And then we fought and we beat the shit out of each other. And then afterwards, he's like, you're a really good guy. I'm going to stick around and train some more so we can fight again. He's like, yeah, that sounds like fun. But at the same time, I'm running into Majima, which is the other character you played in Zero, who is trying to get you back on your feet after 10 years in jail, making you soft, literally just ambushing you in and around the game world. Like a police siren goes off and all of a sudden he's chasing you, screaming, Kiryu-chan! And you have to run from him or fight him in a boss fight that can just happen anywhere at any time. And he'll pop out. Like, normally it's just like you're walking a corner. There he is. You see him. You start to go, oh, shit. You start to run away and it's too late. But I had him recently pop up at the bikini bar, which is literally just, which is this game's version of a strip club, but they needed to get like a not an AO rating. And like, he shows up there. Apparently he can show up in the hostess club as your hostess. I had him show up as a police officer one time, and he was frisking me for weapons. He goes, I better not find any weapons on you. I went, shit, I've got a weapon. And he found it, and he chided me. He was going to arrest me, and then we had a throwdown. Apparently, if you go to the adult DVD store, sometimes he's there as well. Like he just catches you in all kinds of mini games. I think I ran into him. I ran into him somewhere else. Maybe it was bowling or baseball. Like he just shows up, and he can interrupt cutscenes. It's fucking messed up. It's great. I love it. But yeah, this game is outrageous. And in fact, one of the images that he's promoted was his head popping out of a trash can ambushing you. Oh, it's so good. But yeah, like Zero is a better game. It's more evolved. It was a much bigger project. They did more. This is a great game to play after you've played that. And like, I'm having a good time with it. I'm probably about 75% done. It's pretty short. But yeah, there's something about that I keep going back to this place, this literal place, that I've kind of been to in real life, but like actually going to this place again, it's like, hey, I need to go to the drugstore. I know where the drugstore is. I don't need to check the game map. I'll just run there because like I've spent so much time in this damn fictionalized real city that like I know where all the stores are. And I went to a restaurant and it closed and I was upset. I'm like, the store's not here anymore. Yeah. This was my go-to restaurant for food. Damn it. I have to learn a new restaurant. But yeah, it's fun. It's fun to see how the world changed in 20 years. It's fun to see how they reuse assets in ways that just seem that like it's lazy, but like you kind of appreciate the laziness. Like you're like, all right, you put some work in so you could reuse this bowling alley. Good job. Like, oh, you really wanted to go back to this place again, didn't you? Okay. I will say I have been in the batting cages in four distinct Yakuza games at this point. The exact same batting cages. It's amazing. But yeah, like I love this series. It's goofy and stupid and wonderful but all the weird shit I said, like it could tell a really compelling hard-nosed story. Like really kind of gripping crime drama stuff. I think this one's kind of weak on that. Although apparently it's doing a better job than it did originally. But like Zero, that story goes places. Like and not just crazy places, although it does do that. Like it takes twists that are shocking and, you know, gripping. And there are points where like you could stop and go do a bunch of mini quest stuff and just make money and whatever. But you're so driven to see what's happening, you end up just tearing through that game. The contrast is what makes that work so well. If it was just goofy nonsense, then it wouldn't have nearly the impact as it is. Like I just came from the scene where an entire bar got shot up and I need to go back and report to the people who are protecting this little girl while I'm out trying to find the people who formerly were at this bar. But I should stop by a hostess club on the way back. Just for funsies. That makes this whole package kind of successful. So moving on now, Greg and I have both beaten Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle. So Greg, do you want to give some thoughts?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, just a couple of days ago, I saw the credits. Although, it kind of sets you up for still doing plenty of stuff. Like it gives it gives you one of the sort of abilities that you use to interact with the environment and kind of opening up puzzles and stuff after you've beaten the last boss. So
in every level or every world, there's four worlds that leads to one of those leads to a secret area. I don't think you needed it for, but just the last one. To get secret, what do they call it? The S level.
Yeah, there's a secret chapter in each one, but then there's also there's four sort of ultimate challenges that are in the around Peach's castle that I think you need the final ability for. I haven't done those yet or anything, but there's still quite a lot of stuff that I haven't played, a few secret chapters, plenty of challenges. I think I've once you do the final boss, you're going to be over 90% of the actual chapters. But challenge-wise, where they sort of, once you've cleared a world, the kind of maps that were there in the first place get like a little rabid toad guy waving a flag, and you can sort of do a new challenge on that map just for a few skill points and some money. I've probably got about a third of those done.
Okay.
So yeah,
most of those have been
am.
Like real, you know, like the real easy ones in the first world, but which is a problem. Like they don't scale or anything. So if you go back to those late, you know, quite a few of them are going to be really easy. But yeah, there's some trickier ones which I've tried as well. Which you know can be, they generally the challenges tend to be shorter in format. You know, sometimes they might have quite a tight kind of turn limitation, so you know whether you've got to go somewhere or kill a certain amount of enemies in a few turns, you know, so you're going to need to kind of probably you know chain your skills together to kind of help overcome that stuff.
There's one that I've really struggled with where it's get to the end, which I'm not a big fan of the get to the end missions, but it's get to the end and you have one turn to do it.
And, yeah, so and that's the thing.
The hint is you need the right character, I think is what the hint is in that one.
Well, yeah, or at least some sort of combination in terms of, because you know, it depended on what you focused on with putting your skill points in.
Right.
You know, even a given character could be quite differently capable because, you know, you can expand how far they can move. You can expand how far the team jump mechanic when you get a little boost off one of the teammates can go. So if you think of the compound effect of all those things, yeah, that's the thing. I think some of those missions are kind of interesting because the way that I had put so much, you know, of my character, like you know, building up Luigi, who I used a lot, who can jump twice off different off his teammates. There were certain like ones in the main game, not so much the challenges, that where it was like, okay, you know, like you had five turns to do it, and you would still get the best rating if nobody died, and I did it in two.
Yeah.
So I guess those are kind of tricky to balance a bit, but yeah, with the challenge ones where it's like, well, you've got to do it in one and that's it. So I guess there it's, you know, they can balance it more for even if you've got, you know, you're probably going to even need some of these abilities improved to have a shot at it.
I do wish it was easier to get around the stages to the challenges you haven't completed.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because the thing is, I mean, with the retraversal component of it, you know, you have these little obstacles where you originally you wouldn't have been able to push a block or lift a statue or whatever it might be. And then you come back and you can do that now. So you want to find the spots where, you know, you can do that and it might open up a secret chapter or open up the chests, you know, with little things for the gallery or whatever. Or new weapons in some cases, whatnot. But, you know, you get there, you get back to a world to do all that stuff. And the thing is, it actually seems in a weird way bigger than it did the first time. Because right. The first time you went through it, what would happen is you'd explore for a while and then you'd have a fight. And then at the end of the fight, you know, have already kind of moved through the stage. And then you can move on. Whereas now you're actually exploring the areas that you fought on in exactly the same way you're exploring everything else. So it seems like really big and kind of like, okay, well, you know, where are these bits that haven't been yet? So yeah, it can be a little slow, but
and the world's
that's
not,
where it helps that this can be played portably, I think.
And the world's not linear either. So like you may encounter an intersection where you did a big loop originally. And
yeah,
that can make
more
it really
so
hard.
With the latter worlds as well, isn't it? That's what there's more of that kind
the
of
ghost,
stuff later
the,
on.
The graveyard world is really bad about that.
Because you can kind of, once you've beaten a world, you kind of teleport into it from the hub and you can pick one of five points that you kind of land into it on. So. Right. You've got a certain amount of like, okay, let's go, you know, to this point of the level and go from there, but it's not, you know, it could be more granular or it could just give you a menu that takes you to the challenges, you know.
Well, and does that I couldn't pick up an indicator on this, but that map that you select from doesn't have the challenges you've completed on, does it?
I think it says how many you've completed.
Yeah, it does say that. It says how many chests are left and how many, if you found the secret world and if you found the items and if you've completed challenges. But I don't think it says which, like where on the map you should focus.
Yeah, because they're numbered, you know, based on where you would have gone through, in what sequence you would have gone through that world originally, I think.
Yeah, it's the post game here. It feels a little bit less inviting than I would have liked. I think because just the retraversal can be slow and like I said, some of those those worlds are a bit confusing to go around if you're not being guided by the arrows you get when you're actually playing the world. Because there are arrows kind of go like, okay, you need to go this way.
Yeah.
But like even in the ghost world, like I got lost in that one and there were arrows because it loops around on itself so many different times.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of going for the, you know, bit of that kind of ghost house vibe.
But that's,
you know,
really annoying when I'm just trying to get to the game.
It's one thing when it's like the experience the first time. Again, like I said, there's this sort of asymmetry about the experience the first time you go through that world where it's quite guided and you're playing, you know, the chapter sequentially and all that. And then, you know, if you're coming back with new abilities and you want to apply them, it's very open and kind of like, where do I do this? But like I said, it's for me, poking around the world is something that's a lot more kind of feasible, or, you know, sort of for me, based on just playing it in portable mode, you know, kind of somewhat absentmindedly. Right. I mean, I've played the whole game mostly in portable mode.
Yeah, I did a mix.
Whereas, you know, it looks nice in both, as far as I can tell. But yep. It's as you might expect with this kind of game, turn-based strategy. It's really well suited to the portable format.
Yeah, I had a couple thoughts evolving on the game from where I was last week, because I think last week I was in World 2. The escort missions suck. They always suck. I don't know why people keep putting them in games. They suck in this game. They suck in all games.
I mean,
them in. They're terrible.
My first experience with the escort mission that I can remember, unless you count the entirety of Yoshi's Island, which is a good thing, that would be the best escort mission by far in video game history. But if it would be GoldenEye.
Yeah, Natalia, exactly.
And I mean, trying to do that on 00 Agent, it's still kind of a scar.
And it's not that bad in these,
is not that bad.
There's some where it's like you have to escort Toad really far, and Toad does not move very fast. And one point you see dozens of Toads, and I just wonder, like, why can't we just leave this effort behind?
Yeah, well, later on
they're so
like...
expendable.
I mean, there's a scene at the intro where there's literally 1,000 of identical Toads. Literally, like, Toadette's like, "Oh, you found my friend Toad," and I'm like, "Fuck you! There's 1,000,000 of them. I could have brought you any other Toad, and you would have been just as happy, you simpleton." But like, yeah, those missions are not fun.
I didn't mind the escort missions so much. Although I thought it probably could have been fewer of them.
When they chained them, that sucked.
Yeah, you know, like, I guess, I mean, they felt like it was straining a little bit for variety towards the end. Like, there's not
absolutely
that many kind of new enemy types or concepts.
They just dress
in.
Them up differently.
There's always dressing. There's always like little aesthetic things, but I guess the biggest like gameplay development in the final world is kind of just having the environmental hazards.
Right.
Of you know, kind of the, you know, predictably you go in, as you go towards the end, you're going somewhere where lava is, and you know you can get some volcanic stuff happening that makes certain parts of the map dangerous to be in and whatnot. Yeah. But yeah, that's about it. So it kind of feels like it runs out of introducing new ideas towards the end, and maybe kind of lent on the escort missions a little bit as a result of that. But I think, you know, like in general, I kind of. The one thing I liked about it is about the escort mission. I think like they have a place in the game, but maybe not like, you know, too numerous. It's just that kind of what I said before about those idea of missions where you have to get to somewhere. You know, it's about traversal rather than about killing stuff or survival. The thing is, like I said, when you have powered up your characters, you can like cover a lot of ground really fast. You know, if you've upgraded.
But Toad can't.
Yeah, and that's the thing, though, is that it kind of brings you down to earth a bit again. And so it's like, okay, well, this character could just cover, you know, you can't do crazy team jumps or anything. You just cover the ground kind of gradually. And so you need to think about how you can protect him. And, you know, do you want to, like, do a crazy jump and get the other character kind of all the way to the end and protect him from there? Or do you want to kind of form a protective kind of squad around him, you know? I feel like it's not, you know, it's not bad. They're not bad, but I just could have done with a bit less. That's all.
The one thing I noticed that where the game was kind of starting to, I don't want to say wear out its welcome, but was kind of starting to run out of steam. It's in the end world where historically chapters are, so the world's broken up into chapters. There's 9 chapters in each. The last one's the boss. I think 5 or 6 is usually the mid boss. And generally speaking, a chapter is comprised of like 2 or 3 stages. So you'd fight a stage, you carry over your HP, although you could find some health pickups in the game, in the map. And then you go to the next stage. And later in the game, when you have a bunch of characters, if you have a character who got the shit kicked out of him, you can just swap him out. It may mess with your normal strategy, but it still works. Except for Mario. Towards the end of the game, there was a couple missions where they basically did them back to back to back. Like, it was just like you could finish the mission, the next one started. And if you failed the third one, you had to go replay the first 2 again. Which was like, I was like, oh my god, this isn't fun. I have to go replay these easy missions to do the third one again. But they reused the same area. And I just had this feeling like, did they just run out of time to make new battle areas? I don't know, like that was the part where I was like, okay, I'm ready for this game to be done. Like I'm ready to finish this off and move on. About the last fight, so after you've dealt with Bowser Jr. and his steely and his weird thing, the last boss is satisfying to a point. I thought the bosses themselves were usually pretty good for puzzle solving. I thought that one was a little bit weak on it.
Yeah, I mean, I get the biggest thing with the bosses is kind of that's the they're usually the points where you have to kind of learn about the right. encounter the most. You know, where a lot of the it's not without challenge. No. I would say, but most of the game, I feel like compared to maybe some of these kind of turn-based strategy games, it feels like you can kind of if you kind of have a certain amount of sound strategy, you can also kind of adjust on the fly well enough to pass things a lot of the time. The bosses, on the other hand, you probably are, you can make a huge difference, if you've got certain things like, okay, the environment is going to change and something's going to pop up over here. Well, once you know that, then you can already be kind of shifting your characters to be in the right spot before it pops up.
Yeah,
which makes a huge difference for making it. So that's the biggest component of the game where you actually kind of are learning about what's happening, and then you're gonna put a plan in place.
The one perk for me on the final boss versus the previous 3 was that it didn't do the Mario standard do it 3 times. Because in a game like this, especially ones where do it 3 times may mean 2 turns or 3 turns each, like. That can get kind of old. It having like distinct phases where you did a phase, it did a different phase, and then it had a third phase. It's still the whole like do it 3 times, but it's 3 different actions you're having to deal with, and that does feel better, to say the least.
Sure.
I have concerns with this game. I think there's some stuff they could have done better, but this is the first time that this team has made an XCOM game. Like, it's like they even stole some of the iconography. Like this is like a devolved XCOM style game. They did it in the Mario world, and they did a good job representing that world having been corrupted by Rabbids. It plays well. It's a little shallow in some places, and there's a little bit of variety that could have been added to make it feel a little bit more involved. It's a much better game than I thought it was going to be when NWR first got the documents for this game, and I'm looking at it going like, what the fuck is happening right now? And I think they did a good job representing what they were trying to do, even if the composition team didn't realize that you're not making a Banjo-Kazooie game this time.
Like I said, it's very on the nose sometimes.
Yeah, like
I liked it. I got to be
honest. Great, but like
the music's that I like the music per se, but also I did think it was kind of a good fit because there's something
it does
like. I kind of feel like what they were going for in Banjo all those years ago was like a Mario-style world that's been corrupted by juvenile British people
That's fair.
Kind of similar to crazy rabbits. So
it's been corrupted by French people then.
Yeah, I guess there's something about this continent.
Oh.
Like it's a juvenile corruption of Mario universes. So I think it is the right kind of energy for it. So although sometimes it's just so close that you can't help but think of Banjo rather than what's actually happening.
It's pretty. But still, this game is pretty good. It really is.
I enjoyed it. I think I'll probably be at least doing the secret chapters and those kind of ultimate challenges around Peach's Castle before I kind of move on to. Well, we've got Metroid coming out next week.
Yeah.
So I'd probably try and get those done before that happens. But
and Mario and Xenoblade are on the horizon, and just
So everything keeps.
Winter is coming, people.
Yeah, but Yoshi shows up late.
Very late.
It's surprisingly late in a way, but like I said, it does expect you to keep playing, I guess, afterwards, and he's pretty cool when he does show up, and I liked it quite a bit, but then I'm not a very deep strategy player, so it's probably the right area for me.
Yeah, I will say that there were times where I got a little frustrated with the lack of options the game was giving me. And there were a couple missions where I thought, like, okay, you just expected me to fail this mission the first time, and then I was going to learn what I needed to do. Okay, that's fine. But it hits the right notes for what that game is trying to be. I think if they had gone a little bit more hard-nosed, it would have been a tonal clash with the game. And if they had gone a little bit softer, and again, let me take a step back. If they had dialed back the missions where it's like, we're just going to screw you up the first time, and then you can play it again, and you'll be fine. And then just kind of put more organic challenge in there. They may have balanced a little bit better, but like I think they couldn't go too much easier without the game feeling kind of trivialized. And if you run into a mission that you absolutely cannot deal with, the one where it makes you play three missions in a row, on the last mission, when I was going through the second time, I was pretty confident I was going to beat it, but I just hit the easy mode button because I don't want to do that again. I don't want to replay those two missions for a third time. Screw this. And in the end, I just stomped that mission. I was like, well, I guess I didn't need to do that, but I wasn't going to take the risk. Because all it does is it refills your health and gives you like 50% more base health. Which, if you got wrecked in the first mission, that could be a godsend. But yeah, that was purely just like, I want this game to be done and I don't want to replay those two missions again. The boss is right there. Yeah, it's good. To your point, it's a great portable game. All right, well, that is going to do it for new business this week. When we come back, we'll call them a selection of listener mail. Stay tuned. Email time. You could send us your email to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. I started the second segment differently instead of saying, and we're back. So that was why I abruptly jumped into email time. We've got a couple emails because we went a little long on new business this week. You know, we're flexible here at Radio Free Nintendo. So let's go ahead and get right to it. John, you have the first email.
Pedro from Ontario, Pedro from Orlando, Florida writes, thank you guys so much for the work you put in every week for us. Every new episode on Sunday feels like Christmas.
It's like a lump of coal delivered every week.
So last night I had an epiphany and decided that I didn't want to be like John Lindemann with shelves on top of
like
shelves.
It's almost like I did this on purpose.
With shelves on top of shelves of brand new games cluttering my apartment. So I sat down and put every game that I know deep down I'm never going to go through either again or for the first time in a box to trade at GameStop. We're talking Wii games, DS and 3DS games, PS3 games, and even two OG Game Boy games. The whole transaction took like an hour and a half, and I got $366 in store credit, which is a lot for GameStop. I mean, typically most games you get like $3 for.
I'll give you 50 cents for this.
Yeah. I got a brand new Switch and went home. Posted the whole receipt on Facebook, and now I have friends calling me crazy because I traded in a copy of Metroid Prime Trilogy with the tin case and everything, Skyward Sword, and Solato Robo for whatever bullcrap GameStop gave me. I have two of those games on my Wii U. I paid $10 for Metroid Prime Trilogy and played Sola to Robo to death, so I won't miss it. Yes, I know there's people selling copies of the Metroid Prime Trilogy for $330 on eBay, but is that actually doable? Isn't that scalpers fishing for suckers? At the end of the day, I'm not strapped for cash, and I've been dragging that damn metal case with me every time I've moved since 2009 when I bought it. It was time.
Well, I'm probably the resident socialist on this podcast, and I just want
to... Certainly, if you're going to go that way, then yes.
I kind of understand the guilt of selling something for more money than you paid for it. Like, I went through the process of getting rid of my library little by little on the Amazon Marketplace because I don't know. I'm kind of scared by eBay. I don't want to have to haggle or deal with people who, like, I don't want bidding. I just want to set a price and be done with it. Mm-hmm. And there have been times, like, usually I'll do a quick check, like, okay, what else on the marketplace? Like, who else is selling this on the marketplace? How much are they selling it for? And I can, at the very least, charge that. And there have been times when the price surprised me and I felt guilty. I was like, well, there's no way that Fire Emblem is worth $80, like, for the GameCube. Like, I would be... That would be dishonest to ask someone else
if somebody is willing to pay that money for that game. How is that dishonest?
I know. I'm getting to that. Jeez, you're selling the. There's a story
right now,
here.
Right now, I'm gonna be ready to cost people like, don't take Guillaume's investment advice.
Right.
Buy games off of Guillaume.
Anyway, so you know, like, of course. Fire Emblem was kind of an upward curve in terms of popularity when I posted it, and it sold instantly. And I still felt bad, but a different kind of bad. I felt like the sucker, you know? I felt like, oh, shit, I could have asked for more, easily sold it, which was my goal in the first place. I wanted to get rid of it. I wasn't, you know, trying to get rich, but, you know, I wanted it to go. But, like, I really felt like, oh, I must have really... Yeah, been a sucker for selling it for that low because at the speed that it just went, clearly people were looking for it actively, were prepared to pay probably much more. And then when they saw my copy, they just jumped on it. So yeah, my advice would be don't be the sucker. And it's fine to price things the way they're actually worth, especially old games where people, you know... You're saying that I feel like a scalper and I'm taking advantage of others, but these people have probably been looking for your copy of Sola to Robo forever, and they're just happy that you put it on the market, you know?
And for Metroid Prime Trilogy in particular, like, he actually hit on the thing in his own email. You can buy this game digitally.
Yeah. The $10 was like an introductory thing, right?
Yeah,
like,
it's 20 now, I think.
Yeah, so, but even so, I mean, it's obviously far more affordable and available than the actual physical copies.
If you're out to buy a physical copy of this game, it's because you're a collector.
Yeah.
Or you don't have a Wii. If you only have a Wii, then guess what? So first off, no, Metroid Prime... Trilogy going rate's not 330. There are people who listed at 330. They're not going to get a sale. Mm-hmm. If you're looking to sell stuff, and I've sold some stuff in the past, and I've made some money. I've gone after stuff that I knew, like, that's underpriced, and I've bought it and resold it.
Yeah, and I mean, I've sold stuff where I've just been like, wow, I can't believe somebody paid that for it, but there it is.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've bought games that were, like, at thrift stores. I was like, I want to play this game. I know this is way more than this game is worth. Or I know this is marginal. Even if it's like, I'm kind of interested in this game. I know this game runs for about $10 more than that. So maybe after shipping, I break even. But I got to play the game, and I got to sell the game on, and I got to make maybe a little bit of money that I could then use to do this again. But, like, I'm not... You could have sold your copy of Sola to Robo for, like, I don't know, used maybe 60, 50 bucks and got rid of it pretty quickly. I know the going rate's like 80, maybe even more, because there just aren't that many copies of it. But yeah, like, you don't need to feel guilty about selling your games for more money than GameStop is willing to give you, because guess what they're going to do? They are going to price that game based on the market. However, you also have to factor in what's your time worth. Because
that's really the crux of this email. There's this marketing campaign for secondhand car buying, which is basically just like, well, we won't buy your car for as good a price as other people, but your time's worth something, so just do it with us. It's quicker.
Literally,
the marketing campaign.
That's the thing that I like about the Amazon Marketplace, though. Literally, like, it takes maybe at most like 4 minutes to put something up. Like, you just look at the item, what others are selling it for. You price it exactly that price, or you try to lowball them like 1 cent, but then someone is going to do the same thing to you, so it doesn't really matter.
But then theirs is going to sell, and yours is still going to be on the market. So,
well, no, but then your copy is going to sell, like, it's, right. You know, yeah. Like, so, and things, usually if people are looking for it, things go pretty quickly. And all you have to do is, you know, make sure that you've got a supply of envelopes to ship them in and, you know, be prepared to make a trip to the, I don't know how your USPS stuff works over there, but we have to put, okay. But, yeah, and it doesn't really take that much time. And with Amazon, like, you can just forget about it, literally. Like, there have been times where I forgot I had put something up there. So, yeah, it's no trouble at all. But I can understand the convenience of just going to GameStop. But
just dumping them.
Well, especially when you have lots of
games. They're
taking
advantage of you.
That's what I run into, is that I have lots of games that I could potentially sell. For more money than I could get at GameStop, and I just don't want to do it. It's a pain in the ass selling like 10 games at a time. Yeah.
Right. It sounds like he dumped
loads of stuff, and that's the point, isn't it? I mean, in terms of his Facebook friends chiding him or whatever, you know, it's like, well,
yeah.
You know,
he could have sold it to his Facebook friends.
Yeah,
you know?
Apparently, yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the critique would be you could have just, like, cream-skimmed, like, the stuff that's really worth stuff, and then, you know, done the dump of all the other things. But, no, I mean, certainly... You know,
I didn't know Sol Turbo was worth a bunch of money. Like, you would have to go and research every item. Like,
yeah,
I mean, there have been some you would have known. Like, yeah,
believe it, it's very much economic to put a price on your own time. That's actually your very core to the concept of economics. So I don't see that there's any kind of gaffe in my view.
Well, you see it in extreme cases too, with people with these massive like collections of every single NES game, every single game from some console, or they have multiple consoles with thousands of games. They sell them all in one chunk, and there's a good reason for that, because it would take them literally a decade to actually sell them all piecemeal.
Well, there's two factors in that. One, unless you're targeting other people who have that same itch to get every single copy of the game.
Yep.
Most of those games' value comes from being tied into complete collection of Super Nintendo games.
Yeah.
So I think I talked about this on the show.
Definitely with something like Virtual Boy, you know, like the constituent parts might not be worth that much, but I guess if you're trying to sell a whole collection,
because that's the point where if you're buying the whole collection, I want to own all the Virtual Boy games. Well, I can probably get it cheaper if I hunt them down one by one, but that's going to eat up a lot of my time. If I can just buy this lot and I'll have everything and I'm collection done and I can complete my hobby in record time. I talked about this on the show once. I became aware of the Milton Bradley Microvision, which is a system that's actually dying as time goes on, because the screens are their ink, and so they are losing their ability to display, and they're kind of a goofy thing. They were the first kind of portable cartridge-based game, but like the cartridge was basically the majority of the console itself, and the back was like some processing and batteries and stuff like that. And I got a hold of a complete set of them, because there aren't that many games, just to kind of goof around with it for a little bit. That was back when my phase where I was getting things like, let's get a ZX Spectrum onto a modern LCD TV, because fuck it, I don't have any kind of concept of time or place.
That phase.
I haven't bought an old console in 4 years, John.
Just keep talking about doing it.
No, I do keep talking. But yeah, that's the pressure valve to keep me from doing it. But I got lucky. I remember it was 4 years. It was a couple years, but still, a YouTuber, Stuart Ashen, did a video on the Microvision, like pretty soon after I got it, and the price went up, and I said, "Fuck that! I'm dumping this thing," and its value was more because it was complete set Microvision, all games. Then here's Microvision Game 1, here's Microvision Game 2. I probably could have gotten more if I listed them all separately, but it would have taken me far longer to do it. Because, like, you know...
Yeah, and not just putting up the, you know, the stuff on eBay, but also kind of shipping it separately to different people buying it.
Blockbuster wasn't going to move because every fucking Microvision came with Blockbuster. So, like, that one was going to stick around forever. And I actually don't think it was a complete set. I think I listed the games. So I don't think I had the Star Trek game. But the fact that I was saying, like, here is a bunch of games in one shot, take them or leave them, saved me a lot of time versus just like, okay, now I have to go list Mindbuster. Now I have to go list what else was on there? I didn't have the Star Trek Phaser one. There was like 12, I think I had. It was just faster that way to just dump them. Bowling, Connect Four, Sea Duel, like bullshit like that, baseball. And just like unload them all and be done with it. But there's nothing wrong with either approach. Like if you just said, I just want to divest myself from these games. That is my core objective here. I don't want to own all of these boxes.
Yeah, like you're not trying to flip them. That's the whole thing.
Right. Then. Yeah, you did fine. Like, could you have gotten more for these games? Sure. But would that have furthered your objective of I just want to have these out of my house? No.
Right. At the same time, though, if there's no emergency, if there's no urgency, I would recommend doing it just piece by piece. Take your time with it, but kind of do it, make it a regular thing, which is what I did. Like, I knew I was getting out of my apartment, you know, in 6 months. So I just started listing stuff and selling it piece by piece. And it didn't feel like I made that big of a, you know, I don't know, like it didn't feel like I made that much of a dent in my collection, but I was still thankful when I was packing up and moving stuff that I had moved as much stuff as I did. But yeah, like if you're like moving tomorrow, yeah, sure. Take that stuff to Salvation Army, you know, like, you know, if the main goal is to get rid of stuff, then forget about all these ways to maximize your what you get back for it.
Yeah, and the one thing about selling it for more that, I mean, granted, he's able to parlay this into like a Switch. The one thing that selling it for more gets you, and when I was doing game reviews, I would dispose of games, and I really wasn't eager to get maximum money out of it because it was like, well, this is kind of like getting paid for getting this game, but like I gotta get rid of it. Like I don't want, you know, there was a certain sense of out of this house that was in play for a lot of those games, for an alarming number of those games. Mystery Dungeon wasn't cast out into the winds though. That was like like a fucking the bowling game. That kept showing up at my GameStop over and over again in an alarming, like, boomerang effect until eventually it got shipped out as one of our 400 games so it would be out of the state. But, like, there's this sense of just, like, okay, I need these things. Like, having a game and just getting money for it. Because if you trade it for cash, you'll get less because that's part of how they get you at GameStop. So, like, you're able to parlay that to a game. Like, when I was selling games that I was done with or was selling games that I was collecting, I was parlaying that into other games, into other experiences, like doing the trade-up and eventually trying to get to, you know, your Dot Hack Part 4, which goes for some ungodly amount of money. But, I mean, yes, you could have got more money, but whatever is good for you. If you're happy with the deal, then you made a good deal. Mm-hmm. Like that's the biggest thing. And you know, if you have some degree of regret, which I'm guessing if you wrote the email, you probably have at least a little bit. Because if you just didn't care, you wouldn't bother. Like
yeah, but I feel like that's the rare exception to this. It's like, there's one or two games you could have made more money on, but really, the whole thing is just over with.
The majority you probably would have made, 10, 15% more. Because, GameStop takes their cut. GameStop's going to GameStop.
Yep.
They get their skin. And so, maybe you'd have made $1 to $3 more per game. Maybe on the odd ends, maybe 5 or 6. But yeah, there were a couple games you probably could have made some bank on. But in the end, you still did all right.
Yeah, and you've decluttered your life.
Yeah,
there is value in that.
I've got the shelf, and I've written about the shelf, and I've talked about the shelf. The shelf is now officially full, and it's actually a crisis. Because it's I've got to slot this 3DS game
Jesus,
in here.
Just go to IKEA. What's wrong with you?
I like that. If you run out of shelf space, you just buy a new
shelf. That's the thing. I can't put another one in this room. It would be kind of dominating of the space. It's there's a lot of games over here. I can add another shelf to the bookcase. It's a bookcase. I can add another shelf in there. And buy more space.
If it gets too much, just have your alternate personality blow up your apartment.
Mm-hmm. There you go. But there's
just last week you were complaining that no one would, go to your house anyway.
You
so
yeah,
what
fine.
Do you care if there's too many shelves?
Well, no, but then one of the shelves will be mostly empty, and I'll have to go buy stuff to put on it, and then the whole cycle begins anew, and I'll start collecting fucking Wonder Swan games, and then that'll be the thing.
Well, the thing is, James, you know how I solved that problem?
How did you solve
no
that problem,
No longer
John?
Buying physical copies, because guess what? Can't put them on shelves, but you can keep buying the games. Am I right?
But you can't sell them either, John. So that's,
yeah,
that's
you
trade-off.
Can, but what's the difference with me? I want to keep all my games anyways.
I don't know. I went through a brief phase of doing that on the Wii U, and then I regretted it, as I talked about last week with Mario Kart 8 and, not being able to just finance the upgrade by selling the old copy. But the best thing is to kind of, sell off games as you finish them. And, if you're not going to return to them afterwards. But the very best thing... but again, I'm a socialist, is just get them at the library, and you can't keep them forever, and so you're not going to want to, right? And you're not going to pay anything for them. So
I will say your library situation is pretty unique, based on my experience, in terms of having current video games available for checkout.
It's pretty limited, but I mean, interlibrary loans are a thing. Look into it. You might be surprised. I don't know. I know people from Chicago who take games from the library all the time. And
conversely, you got some cash. You got some cash. You did good. I've got some Neo Geo Pocket Color games that I think you might be interested in. Would you be interested in buying dozens of Neo Geo Pocket Color games? Because I could certainly act as your broker.
Yeah, have a couple of sealed games that you might be interested in. Just hit me up. DM me. Slide into my DMs.
Jesus Christ. Well, that's alarming. All right, so I think we've pimped our own sales as much as we can. So, Guillaume, would you care to read the our second email?
MASB writes, "Hi RFN gurus, longtime writer, first time listener." Good one. "Since you guys are back from a well-deserved break, I thought you'd be up for a couple of left-of-center questions. One philosophical, the other video game related." I don't see how those are mutually exclusive. Something to stretch your creative
Guillaume
powers.
Is very much open to way left-of-center questions.
"I assume you're familiar with the concept of spirit animals. So in a similar vein, what is your Sylvester Stallone spirit role?" "I'll throw out a few examples. Some days, I could see John as Freddy in Copland, a good guy trying to keep his head down. Other days, he could be Rambo in a fourth film, tired of your shit and ready to do something about it. I could see Greg as Joni Kovac in Fist, trying to do his best for the people, only to see Brexit go through."
I've seen Fist. I don't remember the time travel to the current day Britain bit in it. I just remember it being a thinly veiled Jimmy Hoffa film. There you go.
It's very, very thinly veiled.
So that was the philosophical question. My other question is, what Sylvester Stallone film would you like to see turned into a video game? Perhaps Cliffhanger is out of the running since Disaster of Day of Crisis exists. Also a Cliffhanger game exists, but anyway.
Yeah, a lot of Stallone stuff from that era did get adaptation.
Wait, there's a Cliffhanger game?
Well, yeah.
No, yeah, why?
I think there is, yeah.
Yeah,
Jesus.
My vote goes, sorry, back to MASB. My vote goes for Nighthawks. It could be a GTA-style game from the cop's perspective. You'd be chasing a terrorist named Wolfgar. It falls into place so easily. Thanks, Guy, and in the coming weeks, remember, let the sun shine in.
Nighthawks is a good call. That is really good.
Like
the whole like retro open world thing, people seem to like that. GTA, Johnny spoke about Yakuza. Like, do that with Nighthawks. Don't forget, you get Billy Dee Williams as your sidekick.
Oh.
Very, very salty Billy Dee Williams. It's as a child, it was tough to see Lando get that profane, to be honest. But he does it, and it's pretty badass. And yes, Rutger Hauer is Wolfgar, the international terrorist or whatever. It's got everything, that movie.
So I guess the opening rush is who's going to go after Cobra and claim that would
be
James
me.
The spirit role thing. Marion Cabretti. Let me just say that name again. Mm-hmm. Marion Cabretti. That's James right there.
Well, like, the thing is, like, Cobra, basically the entire premise of the movie is he doesn't give a fuck. Like,
yeah.
He's just like, oh, I have a problem, I'm going to solve it. It does not matter what the cost of solving
it is. He really
doesn't
like people on motorcycles. I think he, like, kills most of the motorcyclists in the Western United States.
I want to say it's 12. I think I counted one time. But there's just this sort of like utilitarian solution finding to Cabretti that's really kind of obscene. There's just this sense of like, I don't care. Everything can be solved. Everything, like, keep in mind, this was supposed to be basically Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah,
as well.
It spun out of, yes, but Beverly Hills Cop and that movie both spun out of the same development process somehow. That's kind of incredible to think about, but yeah.
But
it was apparently based on a novel.
Yes, it is.
Oh, God.
Which is not, the novel not being anything like this. So I would say that I don't think anybody can be Cabretti. Like, I don't think that could be anybody's spirit. Like, I appreciate his solution.
It's you, James. The sunglasses, the, you know,
I do have
the disease
exact
on the
sunglasses.
Cure. It's so you. It's so you.
But I was actually going to bring it up for the video game. Because it basically already is a video game of a movie.
No, it's true. That's the funny thing, is that a lot of 80s movies have a kind of video game logic, non-logic to them.
Yep.
That hadn't even, you know, shown up in video games yet. You know, this idea of just like hive minds and just killing hordes of stuff. Like, it
yeah, I mean,
seems like, well, the kind of thing that would exist in, you know, the canard about Nathan Drake being a mass murderer. And,
right.
and it's like, well, it's because it's a video game. And it's like, well...
Well, that's like, Commando. Watch Commando.
Yeah,
that movie is a video game. It's a joke.
John Matrix, you know, from Arnie, Marion Cabretti, and of course, Paul Kersey, played by Charlie Bronson several times.
There you go.
They killed a hell of a lot of people and apparently were like upstanding folks.
Hmm. Like, so for Cobra as a video game, like, just look at something like Kane and Lynch, where basically you just run, although you wouldn't be a criminal, which you are in those games, they basically just run through the city and shoot fucking everything. Kane and Lynch 2,
especially with, you know, for me, if I was making a satire game of it, it would revolve around people, sort of the way they're dressed, because that was like the thing those movies that made it acceptable to shoot them on site. It's like, well, they had a leather jacket on, so it was asking
They're holding two axes and banging them over their heads.
You know, it's like, I'll go, look, that person's got their hair spiked up a bit punk-like. Clearly, they're up
Is
to
that
no
purple
good.
Hair dye?
They
need
to
go.
Die.
but like, basically, it's a cover. It's a third-person cover shooter that is not sure if it's being serious or if it's being very not serious. But I look at Canyon Lynch 2 because there's a basically a design conceit in that game is that every few feet there needs to be stuff that explodes when you shoot it in the middle of fucking Hong Kong. So like, yeah, like that's basically what this is, isn't it? This is just shit. I mean, it's Saints Row. You could just make a Saints Row game and call it Cobra and be done. Like you would, like they even have the mindless, mind controlled zombies. Like you're there. You're already
the
done.
Gang members that are more like zombies than like
you
actual
literally
zombie
have to
stuff
change
either.
Nothing except take some dick jokes out, and you're pretty much at Cobra. Just as long as all of them, just some of them.
Just as long as it has a line in it, I don't care. I don't shop here anyway. Anyways.
Yeah, that's really good. That's a really good line.
You destroyed the grocery store. I don't care. I don't shop here anyways.
I'm trying to figure out who I want to say is staying alive as their poll.
Oh, nice one.
Oh, because that... Holy shit. I mean, really? Like, that's really the only word for that. And
I like the fact that MASB actually picked two of the movies that Stallone like actually acts in a bit. Like,
yeah. Like he's not really even in Staying Alive. He cast his brother in it. He's just like an extra in the movie. Oh God.
I would say that my Sylvester Stallone spirit movie animal would be Daylight, because I'm just frantically trying to escape this hell. And,
yes, you're
surrounded by idiots who, with no, I don't know. Wait, that was way too harsh all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was getting there. Tango and Cash is a video game too, isn't it?
I think Tango and Cash is a video game, yeah.
Like, Tango and Cash, if it's not a video game, like, that, I said that Cobra's Kane Lynch. Tango and Cash is literally Kane and Lynch. Like, yep. Almost exactly. Copland could be good. For a spirit character.
He's actually acting in that movie.
I would want when he's just kind of just...
He's making an effort. It's not just like, well, it's my screen persona, don't I look cool? Like, he's trying.
No, like,
he really
like,
should have tried that more often.
Like, that's the thing. Like, I wouldn't want my spirit animal to be Sylvester Stallone playing Sylvester Stallone. Like, I would want it to be... I can't remember what his last name is. He's Freddy in that movie.
The
small town sheriff who wants to join the New York Police Department, but he's like deaf or something. It's
yeah,
no,
no,
that, that's the climax that forces that.
Right, he's a little bit a little bit so.
Yeah,
yeah.
Maybe too trusting. I don't know.
There's like a weird corruption plot, and Robert De Niro has a really bad mustache. And
oh, it's a great mustache.
It's terrible.
Oh, it's pretty. It's perfect though. He's, you know,
It looks like he's got a Vienna sausage on his face.
It looks like he should be in the Sabotage video for the Beastie Boys, and that's exactly what I expect from my fictional policeman.
That's fair.
Maybe since I went too hard, too mean for you guys, maybe I can go too self-deprecating and say that my Sylvester Stallone, my spirit animal movie, it would be Get Carter, because, you know, I'm just like replacing someone much better who came before me.
Oh, jeez. I thought you were going to go with like Stop, My Mom Will Shoot if you went to be self-deprecating.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's a tough one.
Like, I
like the cliffhanger thing, like, though, because cliffhanger and then like just add a river of lava underneath the mountain, it is getting towards Steve, isn't it?
So that's why I was upset when I heard it was a video game, because that was going to be my answer. I didn't bother to check if somebody fucking make a cliffhanger video game. I mean, none of us try hard enough for Over the Top. Like, none of us put in the effort necessary to claim that as our spirit movie.
No. I can't really see ever having children, let alone doing a bonding montage while trying to practice arm wrestling.
So Over the Top's poster is fantastic, and I almost want to get it framed.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a chrome eagle behind him. That's the hood ornament of a car.
Wait, it's a hawk, isn't it? Because his name is Hawk.
Oh, you're right. It's a hawk. Yeah.
Let's just get the facts straight.
There's his truck plowing into a car.
Very important.
The car is coming out of his abs.
I was wondering where he was going with that.
And he's wearing the tank top. He's all roided up in this one. But his face on the poster is completely wrong. He looks like Frankenstein's monster.
Also, it's like the most recent Rambo film.
Yeah, it's true. It's amazing. But like I said, none of us care about anything enough to do over the top. Like, we can't claim that.
It's true. I mean, you know, the problem is, I think somebody could take Demolition Man as the spirit animal in terms of the man out of time. I feel like I could take that, but obviously the game is already exists, and you know, some people know it very well.
Some people do.
Some people have selected that game. See, John, I'm seeing you as an Expendables 3.
Why the third one?
So by the third that's the point where, like, I mean, it was always a money grab.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, but that's
okay.
That's
where are you going with this?
Hold on. That's the one where, like, he's looking around and you can see it in his eyes where he's thinking, like, what the fuck am I doing? Like in the first movie, you can see there's this sense of, like, he's kind of enjoying getting to be an action hero again, despite being old.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's obviously a money grab. Mm-hmm. In the second one, like, it had kind of almost crossed into the scary movie territory. It was like the scary movie of action films. Like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger comes out of a smart car and starts shooting off a gun in the middle of an airport in Central Europe.
Yeah, it's true. But on the plus side, Van Damme kicks a knife into a man's heart. That's
he does.
Be worth something.
He does. But like, they were always campy, but like, they had almost crossed into complete satire by two. And then by three, it's just apathy. Like, apathy is the order of the day. Like, there's this sense of, like, I could be doing better. And, like, there's almost like a defiance on display where he's like, I don't care. This isn't what I should be doing. I've got gifts the world needs. And then he rolls that around, he does Creed. And, like, he actually acts in that movie. He acts.
He should try more often. He really is.
Like, so I feel like, John, that's your fuel to reach for that next ring. Because, you know, I can see it sometimes. Like, you're just like, oh, I'm one step off from just being where I need to be. You need to make a movie that's complete garbage horseshit. And then you can make Creed about how you're an old man who's way too old for what he's doing.
Okay, the way I was reading this metaphor, like, we were the shitty movie, and you were telling him to spread his wings.
I'm just trying to get rid of John. It's fine.
Yeah. See, I was thinking more Rambo in Rambo, where he's and lives in Thailand. And
is this five?
Just leave me alone, and I want to sit here and catch snakes and provide boat rides. And that's
yeah, which is eerily similar to the third one, except it's just like, leave me alone to my stick fighting.
Yep. So that's my spirit animal.
Nobody picked the specialist, which I think there's some potential there.
Assassins maybe is also out there. Judge Dredd.
Judge Dredd is my spirit animal. I've always wanted to shoot Rob Schneider.
Yeah, I've always wanted to have Rob Schneider attached to my back like he's Yoda in Empire Strikes Back.
quite an oeuvre.
Yeah.
Our email inbox is normally pretty normal, but then we get stuff like this, and I can't help myself. But that is
which film we'd like to see? Which film movie we'd like to see as a video game?
I mean,
I choose Death Race, but although it might be a little bit too controversial, you know, because of the violence.
You know, I'm actually surprised. There had to be a Death Race video game, right? There had to be.
That's the joke.
Oh, okay.
It was a very violent Atari 2600 video game or arcade video game.
Yeah,
1976.
But the movie's not tied to the game, right?
It is.
Oh, is it?
Checked.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I fact-check my jokes. Who do you take me for?
John. I didn't realize that they were actually related.
Yeah.
Wow. That's trash. Because Death Race the video game sucks. Oh, that's a bummer. Like, now I'm sad. Like, I thought that was just a knockoff. To find out it's actually related. What terrible thing that is. I mean, I think I have to go with Cobra. I think, yeah, I think it tough. Needs to be...
I think it's tough to beat the Nighthawks thing, to be honest. I think he's nailed it there. So that's why he wrote the questions. Like, I've thought of something so good, no one could beat this.
That's true. I mean, you could do the...
there's already a game for Spy Kids 3 Game Over. Spy Kids 3D, my bad.
Spy Kids 3D Game Over, thank you.
Hey, if you want a real deep cut, I think Detox as a 999-style visual novel.
There you go. Oh, wait, hold on, I've got it. Dating Sim, Rhinestone.
Oh, wow.
God, you are evil.
I mean, are you telling me you wouldn't play a Sylvester Stallone helm dating sim where you're trying to date Dolly Parton? Like, you wouldn't? You would. You would play that. You have to make sure you do your cab work on time, and you've got a lot to handle.
You think if it was in VR, it'd actually be like less of an Uncanny Valley thing than the original film.
The film is trash. That's so bad. And it's so long. It's almost 2 hours. Oh, it's a bad movie. Yeah, that would be... I don't think I could handle that in VR, to be honest. Like, I feel like I need this to be a like, lightly drawn, like, pixel art dating sim, like, from the PlayStation era. Like, just built on the Tokimeki Memorial Clinic engine, and we'll call it a day. God damn it. All right, that's going to do it for emails this week. Greg, what's our music?
Barely audible.
Oh, okay, I'm back. All right, you can send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com and ask us what Ray Liotta film we envision ourselves as. Oh, God. All right, Greg, what's our music this week?
Well, yeah, there is the small matter, a few days after this podcast goes out, of the first Metroid side-scrolling game to emerge in, 13 years?
Yep.
So it's an exciting time. I've been playing a bunch of old Metroid games, getting myself ready and all that, but I thought we'd have some appropriate music for the occasion too. And looking at the original Metroid 2 soundtrack, it's not the most melodic affair.
No.
It's got a sort of interesting attempt to sort of go atmospheric with a very limited sound capacity on the original Game Boy. But if you did play to the end, as I did when we did the retroactive for Metroid 2 many years ago now, you might have heard this very nice credit song while an even larger Samus sprite runs towards you. As the credits roll. So this is the staff roll music for Metroid 2, and hopefully it'll get you in the right mood for Samus Returns in just a few days.
Excellent. And on that, bye, everybody.
Later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.